Today on episode one of the Geek Rex podcast, we celebrate our inaugural episode with Kyle and Shane talking about this week's comics, including the recent Saga controversy, our best reads of the week, our thoughts on the upcoming Arkham Origins game and its recent announcement, and the possibility of a budding DC movie universe. You can find all of our reviews and thoughts on all things related to geek culture at geekrex.com, and follow us on Twitter at geek_rex, and like us on Facebook. We hope to hear from you soon, and thank you so much for listening. Well, welcome to episode one of the Geek Rex podcast. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by
Shane Perry.
Nice to see you, Shane. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Good, good. Hey, busy comics week this week, right?
Somewhat. Not lighter than previous weeks, but it's somewhat.
I think mine are getting lighter every single week, too. I've gotten to the point where I'm dropping easily four or five titles every month, it almost feels like. I used to have a pull of, but it had to be about 10 to 15 books. And now I'm at the point where I'm lucky if I get five every week.
Yeah, I tend to average between five and seven, which that's just more me saying, okay, I don't need to spend more than $25. So,
are you at the point where you get more DC or Marvel or indie stuff? Or what's your average?
It kind of just depends on the week. Because there are some weeks where I'll get only one DC book and the rest will be Marvel. And then there are some weeks where it'll be a lot of DC, a lot of Vertigo, but it kind of just depends on what week it is.
Yeah, sure. Is Vertigo even putting stuff out anymore?
All I get from Vertigo are Fables and Ferrest.
Okay. I get American Vampire whenever it comes out, but that's tends to be rarer than not, unfortunately. Because I think they have another thing coming out in like June. But for the most part, I haven't gotten a Vertigo book in years other than American Vampire. But I do get a lot of Image books lately. I'm finding myself getting, let's see, I get Prophet and Saga, or I used to get Saga. I dropped Saga. So no, that's gone.
Saga's the only one I get.
That's gone, man. And I have been catching so much crap from people for dropping that book, too.
Yeah, people are incredibly defensive of that book, I've noticed, and it's cool, but at the same time, it's really weird that people are so defensive of it.
Yeah, I'm shocked because it's good. It is not a
right.
Poor title in any way, shape, or form. But it's one of these books that it never quite grabbed me as sci-fi. Like it has neat little things like you have Prince Robot with his TV head, and
right.
Is that Liar Cat or Lying Cat or whatever he's called?
It's something like that, yeah.
It's cute, nice stuff. It's really pretty art, but the stories just kind of move a little too slowly for me, sort of like all Brian K. Vaughan stories sort of do.
Especially when Saga will take a good 2-month break sometimes. So.
Yeah, is apparently occurring right after this issue, right?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I have no idea how long it's going to last, but apparently they're taking another break.
You know, Saga is lovely art by Fiona Staples. It is,
mm-hmm.
is well written. It's very Joss Whedon-like, I guess, is the best way to compare it. I know
I can see that.
Some people may debate that with me, but I generally find that to be a pretty accurate statement. It's got a little bit of snarkiness to it with some pretty cool high-concept stuff.
It's a bit more explicit than Joss Whedon tends to be. But
oh, yeah, well, sure.
the humor seems to be very much so in line with Joss's kind of stuff.
I mean, let me just add some background to this, because apparently its explicitness got it into some trouble lately.
Right.
And so,
particularly with the issue that came out this week.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of touching on, or was going to. I didn't read all the background on it because I stopped reading the book. So
Comixology, which is, I guess, is sort of tied into Apple, or maybe it's even is it a division of Apple Inc.? I'm not really sure.
I don't think they are, because you can get Comixology on other devices. It's just, this pertained mostly to what was going to be, if you bought it through Comixology for your iPad or iPhone.
Okay. So it's just somehow Apple sort of blocked it, I guess. Is the thing.
Yeah, I'm not completely sure if it was Apple or if it was Comixology, but I don't think it was Comixology, because it was available for Kindle and things like that through Comixology and through their website. It was just Apple. It got blocked for being explicit, because on the first two pages, you got images of what they dubbed as gay content.
Okay.
Prince Robot got shot. There's some kind of battle going on at the beginning that he's reliving. You find out that it's a flashback, and while he, after being shot, his TV kind of went on the fritz, and so it starts showing gay porn.
Okay.
Which I don't know what that says about his character or anything. Brian K. Vaughan defends the use of it, because he says they don't put anything explicit just for no reason. So I'm wondering if they're trying to tell us something about his character really subtly there.
Perhaps. I think this is an interesting thing, because I thought I read an article today that was an Apple CEO or somebody had said that, no, we didn't block it for content, but I didn't read any further, and I don't know any other reason to block it. No, I mean it's I don't know. I mean, this is one of the things that kind of, I guess, is a little strange to me. You have a publisher like Image that exists for artistic freedom.
Mm-hmm.
There's no editorial, you know, oversight at all. So to have the middleman, as it were, turning around and blocking it, that's kind of like, it's almost the equivalent of a local comic store saying, no, we're not selling this book anymore.
Yeah, pretty much. And a local comic store, those things can become such a rarity nowadays, they don't want to say they're not going to sell anything.
Right.
But and it does say, it's on the back cover, but it is on the barcode there. It does say it's a mature book. It is for mature readers. I've been in some comic shops. My local comic shop doesn't do this, but I've been in some where they do separate the books that are for mature readers. So it's not like they would... I don't think most comic shops would let like a 12-year-old walk out with Saga. So I really don't know what the issue is. And that the two images in question are about the size of a postage stamp. And as many people have noted, if you weren't looking for it, you wouldn't notice it to begin with.
Sure. The last time I got that book, I seem to recall there was a giant alien testicles in my face at some point.
That was a big splash page at the end of the issue. Yeah, that was. I mean, yes, that's perfectly fine, but two images of a guy with penises in his face is too much for everyone.
You had an issue.
I don't know. I assume you probably would have read that one if you read the one with the alien in question. But there's one where the guy goes to one of the characters goes to a sex planet, basically.
Okay.
And there's all kinds of images of sex in every single panel, and it was just it's ridiculous, because that book has had sex from day one.
Yeah.
And the one time it's not straight sex, we got to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the central conflict is based around interspecies relationships, so particularly of a sexual variety. So, I mean, it's told from their baby's perspective. So,
and what's really sad about it is it's been so overblown. It's only in the first two pages, and the rest of the issue is fantastic. And nobody talks about the rest of the issue. They focus on those two pages.
That's so funny. Wow. Well, that's a shame. I hope that this is one of the few times we ever have to hear about something like this happening. I just
hope it attracts more readers to it, to be honest. We were talking a few minutes ago about how people are so willing to defend it. I just love that somebody's embracing an independent title for once.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that, you know, the crowd that is rallying around it are the same folks that, you know, rallied around the idea that Jon Stewart shouldn't be killed in Green Lantern, and the same vocal internet fan base that, you know, pushed Orson Scott Card off that Superman title. I mean, there's a lot of really dumb decisions that happen in the industry, but there's an amazing you know, bandbox of fans that really just step up when they need to. And I'm, you know, to get Apple CEO to turn around and make a response to something that, frankly, is probably not even on his radar is pretty incredible.
It wasn't even on the radar of any major news outlet, which kind of sends a message that, oh, comics don't really matter. We don't need to cover censorship in comics or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to see. Not awesome that the event occurred, but hopefully, you know, lessons are learned.
The response is awesome to see.
Yeah, totally.
So, as much as I love superheroes, it's great to see people grasp a book that's not about capes at all.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the best books I read, are outside of Marvel and DC right now. My favorite Image title is a book called Prophet, which is that's more my kind of sci-fi. The sort of heavy metal meets Conan meets John Carter of Mars or something. I mean, it's just this unbelievable book that I think I'm one of the few people that really really love it that I know.
Think I've ever even heard of it. So that's the main problem with independent stuff is there's not a lot of marketing for it.
It's true. Because
I don't know that Saga would have the following it does if it weren't for the fact that Why the Last Man is such a popular series.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, Brian K. Vaughan is a huge name. I mean, he wrote for Lost, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And he wrote a terrific run on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I don't know if you ever read that arc. Yeah, I mean, that was the best arc of that whole thing.
Was it from season 8?
Yeah, the Faith and Giles storyline.
I vaguely recall that. Season 8 kind of, it was okay.
No, it wasn't.
I tend to forget most of it just because it became such a, oh, I don't have a TV budget anymore. I can do whatever the hell I want with Buffy now, so.
Yeah, it became a big Charlie Fox, honestly. The first couple of arcs I loved. At least loved is a loose term. I enjoyed them very much up until they got to the point where they introduced that future vampire slayer Frey, which is like one of Joss Whedon's pet characters. After that, it started to fall apart for me. But it didn't stop me from buying the Motion comic, which what a waste of money that turned out to be. But
I don't think I ever invested in that.
Yeah, don't. You don't get any of the actors that sound any of the actors from the show, but none of them play the parts, and none of the actors that actually are playing said parts sound anything like the actors from the show. So
that's just depressing.
Yeah, it's awful, 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 awful. But okay, so back to what we ended up reading this week outside of Saga.
Okay.
So Shane, what would you say was the best thing you read this week?
It's a toss-up. I've written a review for one of them. It's a toss-up between two books. So I wrote a review for Batman and Red Robin for the site already.
Okay.
Which I think I'm going to go with that one. I'm leaning towards it being both Batman and Red Robin and Thor, but I think I'm going to go more towards the Batman and Red Robin.
Cool. Yeah, you know, I read that Batman and Red Robin. It was the first thing I pulled out because of the whole Carrie Kelly thing.
Yes, such a non-controversy.
Well, yeah. Batman and Robin was a title I loved, and one of these things that our audience will learn about, Kyle, is that he is a giant Grant Morrison fan.
Okay.
But
so everything before the New 52, then.
Yeah, you know, and then into Batman Inc., but Batman and Robin was a title I started pulling at the beginning of the New 52. I really loved everything Peter Tomasi was doing with Damian and his relationship with his father. And
that's what made the book. That's why I decided to pick up the book in the first place, because, yeah, Dick and Damian was interesting when Grant Morrison was writing it, but the fact that with the New 52 it allowed it to be Bruce and Damian was going to make the book a lot more interesting.
Right. So. Right. Well, you know, it depends on your outlook. I mean, there are some of us who argue that we would have loved to have seen Damian and Dick a little longer, but I can understand, based on Tomasi's take on that relationship, the value of having Bruce and Damian together. It was really, really quite good. But the problem for me was the rest of the issues, where...
Yeah, it has a zombie story arc, if I recall, which was just pointless and... Yeah, it's been an interesting run.
Yeah, and like that villain at the very first arc, Nobody, which I mean, mm-hmm. at least had some thematic semblance to the first arc, but
right.
it still wasn't a terribly interesting villain. Also had a stupid name. I mean, it was one of the worst named villains I've ever heard. But on top of that, then you had the zombie cult arc. You had the arc of villains who, like, that guy who had a boot print on his face, and they were mad because Batman had hurt them at some point or another and had irreparably injured them. Terminus, I think, was the name of the villain.
And that's right. Mm-hmm.
Awful, awful stuff. So I dropped the book.
Yeah, it was more just, the stuff that made it worth reading each week was seeing Damian and Bruce interact, and that was more the Batcave scenes, and then just... like, the Damian stuff is what made it more interesting, because if I wanted a Bruce book, I could just read Batman.
Correct.
So.
Yeah, sure. But I did get that Silent issue, and I do agree with you based on your review of that. It was a gorgeous book.
It's so good. I think even if everything else Tomasi does on Batman and Robin is complete crap, I think that issue will make his run memorable.
Yeah, it was...
I still stand by my comment in my review that it is probably the best single issue in the New 52 so far. It's so good.
I can definitely jibe with that opinion. It was well written, and there's probably a great challenge to writing a silent book when you think about it.
Oh, I can't imagine how difficult it was. I don't know.
I mean, it's just a lot of expression that probably has to be written into, like, the directions, you know? So I definitely love that issue. I love the issue before it where it detailed, like, Alfred and Bruce and Damian's dreams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so those were good. So I have not put the book back on my pull list is what I'm trying to get to. but I did go and buy this issue because it's still
on your radar, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, when it's really good, it's amazing. And when it's really not, it is very mediocre to bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned around and picked up this Batman and Red Robin, and I would say I liked it a good deal. It had a bit of a weird science element to
it. Yes, I was extremely worried while reading it. I was reading it, and I was like, I was halfway enjoying it because I kind of love things that put any kind of... I'm a big League of Extraordinary Gentlemen fan, so anything with literary characters, even if it is the DC version of Frankenstein, I was still glad to see it. But then the whole time I was in the back of my mind, I was just, everybody's going to hate this issue because it's so different from everything else in the main Batman books.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely was a really strange version of Bruce. Like, I felt like Bruce was almost alien when I was reading mm-hmm. it, but it also makes sense because his son has been killed.
I mean, yeah.
It's hard to put myself in those shoes to understand what, you know... what a father would feel like when his young son has been murdered, perhaps in a world where all his friends are coming back to life. I assume that's still in continuity in the New 52.
Yes, because he mentions that Superman's been killed and brought back, and that he has died and been brought back. So,
So that makes me wonder, by the way, not to like get on a tangent here about the New 52, but so Bruce is dying, quote unquote. Which I assume he's referring to, like, the Final Crisis stuff where he's been shot with the Omega Beams and sent back
yes.
in time.
Mm-hmm.
So Bruce's dying is in continuity in the New 52 now.
And so is, yes, this issue seems to confirm that, and so does it confirmed that Doomsday did kill Superman at some point.
All right. But
or at least I assume it was Doomsday. That's the only death of Superman I know of. So,
man, I gotta flesh this stuff out because, I mean, I try not to worry about it too much because I just, you know... For me, it's just shut up and enjoy your comics. But
right.
When they bring
it
this
is
stuff...
the whole fact that the New 52. Well, I mean, I guess now it's going to be 6 years later since we are about a year into the New 52. It's about a year continuity wise.
Right.
Year and a half into the New 52. It's about a year continuity wise. So it's been 6 years since these superheroes have been known to the rest of the world. So in that 6 years, we've gone through however many Robins. Batman has died. Superman has died at some point. So that's a lot of continuity happening in 6 years.
Yeah, he just had a horrible relationship with young men, didn't he? He was just
apparently
he kicked dick out, turned around, got Jason, then turned around and got. I mean, I assume Jason must have died. I don't even know if Jason.
Yes, they mentioned Jason's death as well.
Oh my gosh! Okay, because so
I don't. Well, it might not have been Batman and Red Robin. I know it is mentioned in Batman this week that Jason did die.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Okay. That's...
Which will make it, I think, makes it more interesting. I kind of hope they stick with this whole Bruce wanting to resurrect Damian thing, because next month is Batman and Red Hood, and that should make it interesting for him and Jason being together.
So every month coming up, it's going to be Batman and Red Robin. You have Batman and Red Robin this month.
Batman and Red Hood is next.
Okay.
And then Batman and Batgirl is okay. After that.
Is it like Batman and Nightwing after that, or?
I can pull up DC's website and look. I don't know. I haven't seen Nightwing. I know Batgirl and I know Catwoman are two that are coming up.
Catwoman, huh? All right. Well, that could be interesting. She's been written not well at all in the New 52.
She's fine in JLA.
Yeah. That's, you know, John's.
I actually really liked her in JLA, yeah. Especially you have that little moment where she steals Steve Trevor's wallet. I really liked that scene.
Yeah, oh, where she kisses him and pulls the wallet out. Yeah, it's she is a character. I'm not crazy about how she's been handled so far in the New 52. Mm-hmm. Like I really love that Ed Brubaker take on her, where she was more or less a pretty heroic thief. And like her sexuality was somewhat played down, like it wasn't. Right. You know, she didn't have her zipper all the way down to her navel. but in JLA, she still kind of looks ridiculous. But at least the characterization's getting better.
It's Geoff Johns, so of course it's a little bit better.
Yeah.
looking at DC's website, next month is Batman and Red Hood.
Okay.
June is Batman and Batgirl, and then July will be Batman and Catwoman.
Okay. So that's all we know about, because July's as far as
right.
It goes.
I assume after a while we're going to have to get a new Robin, because they just can't keep this up for too long. The novelty of it's going to wear off after a while.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I wonder about is, I mean, this is good filler, and certainly the next issue after that's going to have to be Batman and Nightwing, is my guess, because there's only after you've gone...
Yeah.
What's that?
Nightwing and Batwoman. That's the only thing that's left.
Yeah,
so.
And I mean, are they actually even going to have a Batwoman issue, considering J.H. Williams is like got lockstep, you know, basically owns Batwoman's storyline at this point. So.
Yeah, I presume Nightwing, and it would be fitting that Nightwing would be the last one in that run of these new partners.
Sure.
But it's going to be interesting to see. They hint in this issue, but it's also part of the whole WTF month thing. They hint in this issue, oh, Carrie Kelly could be the new Robin, but this issue implies that there's no chance of that happening. Everybody's upset. They're like, oh, she's being introduced. That means Stephanie Brown's never going to show up in the New 52, but it doesn't even put a nail in that coffin at all. It's just, I kind of love seeing her introduced. It's about time she's been introduced into Batman continuity outside of Frank Miller.
Well, yeah, nothing really precludes her from, you know, becoming, I mean, Stephanie Brown, becoming a character they use. It's just the signs, I guess the tea leaves have sort of been shown that it has yet to happen. It's sort of like Wally West and all these characters people keep, you know, screaming for.
Wally West is an interesting one. I'm going to be interested to see if they make Wally West the new Reverse Flash.
That would be awesome, actually.
They've hinted at Reverse Flash. That's the best thing. They just got done with their whole guerrilla warfare storyline in Flash with Gorilla Grodd attacking Central City.
Okay.
It was pretty good. It was decent, which that's really all that can be said for Flash so far. It's been pretty good. And then Reverse Flash shows up at the very end of that arc. He hasn't shown up against the Flash yet, but it's going to be interesting to see who is the new Reverse Flash.
That almost tempts me to go and buy the book again. That's another one that I sort of dropped off of. I love the art. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not like crazy about the way, you know, Buccellato and Manipul write.
Yeah.
It's a little, I don't know, just it's very standard meat and potatoes superheroics right now.
It is. It is.
Sort of like how Nightwing's being written too.
It's sort of like how Action Comics is right now. So
yeah, it's just okay. And it for me, unfortunately, it's sort of like when you're putting your comics buying budget together, you don't want to just buy okay. But if
that's true,
if the reverse Flash is one of my favorite villains ever, so I may pull a couple of issues for that. Has that started already?
He's been on one page, and that is the extent of his appearance so far.
Okay, so I guess starting with issue 19, that's probably what I'll buy next, or 20 or whatever it is.
Pull up and see when Reverse Flash is going to show up, but. Anyway,
that was the only Flash arc I ever bought as a kid was the return of Barry Allen, where he turned out to be Reverse Flash. Oops, 20-year-old spoilers. but I that was like the one of those Mark Waid written Flash arcs that I absolutely like cherished as a kid. I'll check that out for sure. But so anyway, Batman and Red Robin, I thought it was a very good issue generally.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Frankenstein. I love this take on Frankenstein.
And I love that canceling Agent of Shade didn't stop him from being a member of Shade.
Right. Exactly. It's sort of, like his relationship with Shade is sort of in question because he quit Shade in the series.
And then he's on Justice League Dark now, I believe. So.
It's like, it is so funny. He showed up in Justice League Dark. He never really got invited on the team. He just kind of never left. It's like, I guess I'm just hanging out with you guys now.
All right, then.
And you know what? It's a good place for him to be because I enjoy Lemire's writing of the character. Not as much as I like Matt Kent's writing him, though. But it was nice to see him in the Batman title. I like to see some cohesion in the universe. So I liked it a lot. So last question about this then for you, Shane. Any bets on who you think Robin will be?
It's a popular choice, but I think it makes the most sense. I think Harper Row is going to be the next Robin. I would not be surprised to see maybe if someone that's in the current Bat family maybe takes up the mantle for a little bit, but I think that's even less of a chance, though. I think it's going to be Harper Row.
Okay. You're probably right, is my guess.
My guess from Batman and Red Robin is that Tomasi, at least, is not done with Carrie Kelly, but I don't see Carrie Kelly becoming Robin at this point.
She has no training. She has no skills. I mean,
yeah, and it's not even clear what she and Damian were doing. She was teaching him something, but it's not clear if it had something to do with film or theater or what.
I was a little confused too because, you know, in the Silent issue, that letter he got.
Yes.
I thought it was from Clark Kent.
I thought so too. I thought so too, and I was like, oh, that's sweet. They were friends, and then all of a sudden, we're gonna go back and reveal it was Carrie Kelly.
You know, and that's kind of cool, playing on expectations. That doesn't bother me, but I'll be interested to see how he continues to use her. I hope she's an ongoing character in this arc, and it wasn't just a one-shot, come-buy-this-issue kind of thing to raise some sales. Because this was a hard book to find when you're not pulling it, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, it was. There were like two copies left on my comic book store shelves. So. Carrie Kelly must have pulled a little bit of stuff. I mean, it sold out at Diamond.
So, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was popular enough to get people going. And then I guess they read the actual issue. It's like, oh, she's not actually becoming Robin. Never mind.
Yeah, I think it was more the controversy than necessarily the excitement that, oh, Carrie Kelly's finally a main DCU character.
Well, jumping to the other side of the aisle real quickly, Thor. That was the best thing I read this week. And there was some stiff competition for me because I generally really enjoy anytime a Snyder Batman comes out. It's not always excellent, but it is the most exciting of the Batman titles for me because I feel like something always kind of happens. With Hawkeye coming out this week as well, that's another book that I read and love, and that's typically another highlight for me. But I pulled open Thor this week, and I was blown away by how exciting that title was. And it's shocking because well, I guess it's actually it's heartening because last month's title, which was The Origin of Gore, the God Butcher, I thought it was not very good. Certainly less stellar than the arc had been up to that point. So I was getting a little worried that we were starting to see the worst side of Jason Aaron.
Yeah. Thor's been one that it started out great, and it's just kind of become, I feel like this story has gone on too long, is my problem with it.
Yeah.
It's still good. It's still fun to read. It's still good. Jason Aaron, I feel somewhat loyal to him. He's a fellow Alabamian, so, and he's an Alabama fan as well with me, so I feel like I feel loyal to his work just because of that connection, but yeah, it's been, this story's been a little too drawn out for my taste, but it's still been entertaining despite that.
Yeah, it's one of these books that, one, it has beautiful art, but I guess this month was particularly exciting for me because we finally got a little bit of culmination of this time travel stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, for those who don't read Thor, the basic concept is you have a character called Gore the God Butcher who is murdering gods basically throughout time. And we have three different iterations of Thor. You have far past Thor when he's a young, beer-swigging, having sex with a lot of women, Norse god. You have middle Thor, present-day Thor, who's the Avenger Thor that you see in the movies, basically. And then you have far future Thor, who's more or less a carbon copy of his father, Odin, with an eye patch and a robotic arm and everything. So, and he's sort of like the last remaining Norse god, more or less. At least that was what they would present to you in the early parts of the arc, until that's proven not to be true. So, this issue was really cool because you got an opportunity for at least present-day Thor to meet his future counterpart. And some of those interactions were really awesome, I thought.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I thought that that was probably the strongest part of the issue was the banter between Thor and future Thor.
Yeah, yeah, it was really, really, really cool. And I guess this is building up to some sort of cataclysm with this thing that's called the God Bomb. I mean, the arc's called the God Bomb.
Right.
But I guess this God Bomb is going to be the thing that's supposed to destroy all gods.
Even though the God Butcher has supposedly killed everyone except for Thor, but whatever.
Well, he's kept some of them as slaves, right? I mean,
right.
The rationale of the God Butcher, I think, is interesting. It's not necessarily perfect, though.
I think you had problems with his origin. I thought he had a believable enough origin. It might not have been as great as some of the previous issues of Thor, but I thought he had a very believable reason to dislike the gods.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely makes sense. I guess the problem for me with the origin issue is that I hate for my bad guys to have too much background because I don't want to get a point where I relate to them.
That's true. So you won't be reading the new Thanos series then?
Heck no. I have some friends.
Also by Jason Aaron.
Yeah, I have friends that really like it. And I personally would rather keep my idea of Thanos as, you know, this all-powerful dark side ripoff. So I'm okay with it as is, and I hope the movie makes him as evil as possible and makes him the dark side we'll probably never get in a movie. So, but yeah, so anyway, Thor, good, great title this week. It was probably my favorite. What was the worst thing you read this week, Shane?
Let's see. The only thing we haven't talked about, we've talked about three of the books I picked up, and then I picked up Fantastic Four, which has been not as, I guess, I don't know, intellectual as Hickman's run was on the title, but it still has been a fun book, which Fantastic Four, when you get the interaction with the characters done correctly, it can be a very fun book. And I feel like that's what it is right now, but it still wasn't, it was just good. It wasn't amazing, it wasn't bad. So really the only thing I read that was bad wasn't even the entire issue. It was just part of the issue, and that would be we have to talk about Batman for me, then.
Okay, sure, sure. Let's talk about it.
All right, so Batman kind of, we've been hearing all this buildup about Zero Year. We're in this two-month time period where Scott Snyder gets to tell us about how the next arc he's doing is the best arc he's ever written, which is the same thing we got about 6 or 7 months ago when we were getting hyped for Death of the Family. We got told it was the best thing he'd ever written. And now we're being told 0 year is the best thing he's ever written. And so we get two little issues that they don't seem to want us to care about. And he doesn't seem to really care about. But he still does some interesting stuff in it. I thought the use of Clayface was good. I think, to my knowledge, this is his first time showing up in the New 52.
No, it's not, so. Actually. He showed up in John Layman's Detective Comics may have been the backup story. I can't quite recall, but it was like John Layman's second or third issue. Poison Ivy used him as a henchman.
Oh, okay. So this is his first time being a main villain, then?
Correct.
Okay. We get Clayface in this, which... Snyder had sold this arc as being a really simple detective story, and I think he was pretty accurate with that, because it starts off with the whole Bruce Wayne robbing a bank, and anytime you have somebody... a main character in a Batman book acting unusual, first thought is, oh, it's Clayface.
Right. So, yeah. It's.
And I put that in my review of Batman that I wrote and posted yesterday. I said it's really sad that Clayface has such an interesting ability and nobody knows how to write him except for him taking the persona of a main character.
Yeah, it's... Clayface is an interesting villain. A buddy of mine, it's his favorite villain ever. You know, there's been so many different iterations of Clayface. You had Matt Hagen, Basil Carlo. I think there may have been a lady Clayface at one point in time.
Of course.
There's always a female version of the villain at some point, which, you know, is fine if it makes sense. Yeah, if it's written well. Yeah, it's not a gimmick. This issue I thought was interesting because it was, you know, Scott Snyder said it was this issue and the next issue were his homages to Batman the Animated Series. And
I did not read that. That makes a bit more sense. Yeah. I can see that.
With that kind of weird beginning where it's like, oh, why is Bruce Wayne holding up a bank or whatever it was he was holding?
Which I'm tired of comics. Just to segue just for a second, I hate when comics have started doing this recently where we start off, not even in media res, we start at the end of the story, and then the rest of the issue is explaining why the first 2 to 5 pages didn't make any sense at all.
Right. Yeah, it's a storytelling gimmick. I don't know. I'm not at the point where I'm bothered by it yet, but I can understand... the overuse of it, you know, it's this idea of what's going on. It's TV shows do it a lot too. I've noticed.
Yeah, it's just what's going on, and then all of a sudden six days earlier, and it's like, oh, okay. Well, why didn't we just start here?
That lost style of storytelling, I guess. That was his homage to that series, and it works well. I think generally, there's a really nice flashback scene to Damien, too, that yes. I really appriated.
Yeah. I thought that was the strongest part of the entire issue.
Yeah, it just because it would seem weird to me. Because at some point, you've got to be able to put down these books. There's only 19 of them for every title. Mm-hmm. You should be able to put them in some sort of readable reading order if you really wanted to follow, like, what's Bruce doing in what order, you know?
Right, and this one was kind of hard to place a little bit.
Yeah, it's true, because it's after... it's after the funeral. It's after, you know, Bruce is not over it, but certainly not as disturbed as he is in Batman and Robin.
No.
And we have sort of two different types of Bruce Waynes. So clearly they're occurring at different time periods. So you have to determine,
I get the impression this one's a little bit earlier. But I don't know what gives me that impression, but just for some reason I got the feeling that this was a little bit earlier than Batman and Red Robin takes place.
Really? You think so?
It's hard, because in both issues he seems uncomfortable with talking about Damien's death.
Yeah.
So, maybe, I don't know. I could see either way, because he does seem a bit more comfortable talking about it. He doesn't really want to say, he's still a little uncomfortable with death, he still doesn't want to think about it, but he's gotten to the point where he's willing to watch footage of the two of them together.
Sure.
Which is nice to see, just because Robin hardly ever shows up in Batman, the main book, and so it was nice to see Snyder... do something with Damien.
That's what's weird to me is that I assumed that Batman and Red Robin occurred before this story, only because I figured Bruce, so stricken by grief, was immediately trying to revive his son in a Lazarus pit or
doing. I can understand that. Apparently, I guess there's no Lazarus pits left since Frankenstein was his first choice. But
Batman Inc. They were talking to David Cameron, the Prime Minister, and apparently there is a Lazarus pit left. So I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, we can establish, okay, Batman Inc. came first because that's where he dies.
Right.
I think Batman and Robin 18 comes up immediately after that.
I would think so. I mean,
if not 2 days after it.
I mean, certainly post funeral.
Anything else is just fair game, I think.
Yeah, I guess at some point you just have to stop worrying about it and just sort of say, yeah, you know,
it's only confusing if you're reading more than one Bat book. So,
and, you know, but the thing is, I think most Batman fans kind of are. If you like Batman, you really like Batman. I mean, not many people are just getting the Snyder stuff, but I could be wrong. I really am not sure, but I would say I like this book okay, and when I finally get my review together on this, you know, my shorter review, this is probably going to be a solid B title.
That's exactly what I gave it. Anyone listening, feel free to check out my review of Batman, which is already posted. I gave it a B. And it really had nothing to, I didn't mark it down because of the backup, which we can talk about in a second, but it was just that this one feels like it felt like filler. I can appreciate it a little bit more knowing now that it's supposed to be an animated series homage, but it felt very, very much like filler, and it felt like a very apathetic story.
Yeah, it is a time holder for sure before 0 Year starts. And what's going to be funny is once 0 Year kicks in, that for 11 issues we're going to be in flashback mode. So yep. The main Batman title is not going to have any present day Batman action. So what I'm curious if Detective is going to become the main Batman title for almost a year, or
I'm going to guess Batman and Robin does.
Probably so. I mean, Tomasi is probably the more well-regarded writer. So
I think that one, it's not even that. I think that one's the more read of the two.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's got the more critical acclaim at this point, especially after that horrid issue 19 from Detective. I mean, if anyone read my review of Detective Comics 19, they know I was not a fan of that book, which is unfortunate because I thought John Layman's run had started off very interestingly. I mean, anybody that can make the Penguin and his henchmen, you know, fascinating characters, they get pluses for me because I don't particularly like the Penguin. But I was compelled enough to keep reading. But anyhow, yeah, so Batman, very good. Let's talk about that backup for a second.
Well, I was just going to say real quick, I think one thing Snyder does very well besides the Robin scene, I think he did a good job adding something different to Clayface. He doesn't give him a different type of story, but he gave him at least something different for his character, which I appreciated him at least trying something different.
Okay.
But
I think you're right. I mean, there is a lot of freedom in the New 52 to make the villains, you know, give them new spins. They don't have to be exactly like how we saw them pre-New 52.
Right.
And I can appreciate sort of a new version of Clayface, a new iteration of him, just like I can appreciate a new take on Mr. Freeze like they tried to do in the annual.
Oh, I loved that. I thought that annual was fantastic.
Yeah, it was well done. And I don't know how much of that was Snyder and how much of that was Tynion, since I know they both sort of wrote it together. But
I would hope it was Snyder.
I would hope so too. But yeah.
Which I guess is a decent enough segue then to what we both kind of want to rag on a bit.
Yeah. Well, I feel like DC is forcing a rider upon us, and I'm getting a little sick of it. But it's my feeling is if I wanted to buy a book that James Tynion has written, I would buy
Talon.
Yeah, I would buy a book that he wrote. I'd buy Talon, or I'd buy Red Hood, which is about to start, with him writing it. But I'm glad they're giving Alex Maleev work.
Yes,
because Alex Maleev is an incredible artist, one of my favorite artists ever. As a matter of fact, he sent me a sketch recently, which was really exciting. But the pairing him with Tynion is just doesn't work. I mean, this story was terrible.
And, yeah, it's two filler issues, and the backup has to be two filler issues. And it was an opportunity, I felt. Like, the backups, when they announced that they were going to be doing backups in Batman, nobody had a problem with it, because Snyder was writing the backups, and they were actually decent. And then this one just, it had nothing to do with the story, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it made no sense. It was stupid. It I didn't care for it.
Yeah, it's got this weird, like, Shuma Garoth monster at the end. I mean, I appreciate any interaction between Batman and Superman. I'm excited about Greg Pak's title that's coming out. It's immediately going onto my pull list the same month as Superman Unchained. So, and this backup really was a nice, like, character moment between Batman and Superman.
And it was something I wish could happen in the main book, because I wish it wouldn't be relegated to a backup, how Superman's trying to help.
Right. I mean, they're supposed to be best, like, not best friends, but very good friends in the new
52. I think they're very close. They're closest allies. They're each other's closest allies, but I don't know if I'd say best friends.
Batman has no friends, apparently.
Yeah, especially after death of the family.
Yeah,
so.
I guess it's just sort of pushed them all away, you know? Of course, here's another timeline thing to think about, Shane, and I'm not going to mention timeline anymore after this.
Mm-hmm.
Death of the family occurs, and then the events of Batman Inc. occur. So
yeah.
The folks in Batman Inc. still were willing to talk to Bruce because they were part of Batman Inc., or...
I just choose not to deal with that because I haven't been reading Batman Inc., so that's my approach to it.
That's maybe a fair approach, because unfortunately, as much as I love Batman Inc., it does stick out like a sore thumb.
Yep.
In terms of continuity, and it's like, just like Green Lantern is this weird holdover from pre-New 52 continuity, Batman Inc. is the same way. At some point, we'll talk about that in detail when Morrison's run comes to an end, I hope. I hope to even do a giant piece on it, but because I've loved Morrison's run from the beginning, but it really does stick out very strangely. So let's switch gears then real quickly, since we're talking about Batman. You know, I'm a huge, huge fan of the Arkham games.
Yes.
Particularly, you know, I'm kind of torn which one I like better between Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. Probably Arkham City because it's bigger.
I'm going City just because I'm a Two-Face fan.
Sure,
so.
Sure. But you don't get much of him in the game, unfortunately. But
it's a lot more than he got in Arkham Asylum. So.
That's true. At least he has a presence, you know. And you get all kinds of cool villains. You get Ra's al Ghul. You get...
Clayface is actually used really well in Arkham City. So.
Yeah, you get Clayface, you get Mr. Freeze, and like one of the most intense boss battles I've ever done in a game.
Yeah.
But, you know, so news came out today, or not today, but a couple days ago, that the prequel, quote-unquote, game, it will be coming out in October, I think that's right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it titled Arkham Origins. And I guess the premise behind this game is that, you know, years before Arkham Asylum, on Christmas Eve, Black Mask hires 8 of the world's deadliest assassins to come and kill Batman. And that's pretty much all we know at this point. So, Shane, what do you think about it?
We know a little bit more, and just from pictures, we know the Penguin's in it. Presumably he's not one of the 8 assassins. Deathstroke, I think, is the only confirmed of the 8 assassins. And I'm excited. I think the Christmas look to it's going to add a bunch of interesting things with it being on Christmas Eve. I think that's going to add an interesting look to it. I'm excited about it being all of Gotham City. And I really don't know what to say at this point, since we haven't seen a ton of footage from it. We've only seen pictures. But at this point, I'm excited.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I have some reservations about the fact that Paul Dini is not writing the story as he had wrote it for both Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. But I understand that the lead game designer is somebody that has comics experience. So that is at least somewhat heartening. I love those games very, very much. So this is like the one property where I'm very interested in it pretty much no matter what.
Yep.
And so there are a few things I am concerned about. You know, if they're using all of Gotham City, the one thing I don't want to see happen is it turns into a Grand Theft Auto type clone. And I feel like there's almost maybe an attempt to maybe go that route, like they did with the Spider-Man games from years ago.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be more Spider-Man than Grand Theft Auto, because they have said that there will be crime going on that you can stop, go away from the main story and stop petty crime going on, which they had a little bit in the other games. But it seems like it's going to get a little bit of a bigger focus with this one.
No, that's okay too. I mean, I like the idea that you can get involved with multiple things with Batman, just like in the comics. I mean, that's Batman doesn't just focus on one thing; he focuses on a million things.
Yeah, I really like. They said they're going to have a feature called Most Wanted, where you can go out and hunt down members of the Rogues Gallery that are not part of the main story. Which is, again, like you said, it's like being part of the comics or something like that. I think that makes it interesting.
Well, that's actually kind of cool. I didn't know any of that, so I'm excited about the game itself, and I hope that it's done well. I know a lot of people are worried that it's not the same developers. Rocksteady's not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just another division of Warner Brothers.
It is,
but all the same, I'm willing to give it a chance. It's a really big license that they know that there's a lot of expectations sort of riding on the game itself. So why screw it up? But at the same time, it makes me wonder if Rocksteady's game is still coming out, which was supposed to be based around Silver Age Batman.
Right.
And
I'm wondering if this is what we were supposed to be getting, and that Silver Age stuff was just all rumor.
Yeah, maybe. Could have been all smokescreen. Who knows? I was excited for it, too, because the idea of like a totally different Batman take would have been really cool.
It probably would have been a daytime game as well. That would have been interesting to see.
Yeah. I mean, because I love Batman the Brave and the Bold. And, you know, this, I mean, pretty much everything around Silver Age Batman is sort of interesting to me. I love the old Adam West stuff. And, you know, that's just it's just a valid take on Batman. It's just a different one. And that would have been very interesting to play in a game setting, especially if it had been in continuity with the Arkham games. But this one visually matches up better, and maybe we'll have a bit more of a similar feel. I just hope that, you know, one of the things about games is that bigger isn't necessarily better.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that they don't lose focus when trying to put together just a ton of stuff in Gotham City. We'll see. It will be interesting
to see if Joker shows up. And that seems to be the only justification for a prequel, is to put the Joker in it.
Well, Mark Hamill's retired now, so that's, you know, at least from voice acting as the Joker. So they either have to hire somebody else, like John DiMaggio or one of these other voice actors that has portrayed the Joker recently. I can't remember the name of the guy that's doing it for Injustice. But I feel like if they did that, they would have to either bring somebody new in or just not do it at all. And if it's within the Arkhamverse, if they can't use Mark Hamill, it would almost seem like a little strange to even have Joker there. I mean, if somebody can do a great impersonation of him, maybe, but it seems like it might be a bit of a folly. I'm also kind of excited because, you know, Joker attracts like so much attention.
Yes.
So Black Mask, there's a villain that not that many people are very familiar with.
Yeah, and he was in Arkham City, but it was only part of the Robin DLC. So if you didn't play that, you didn't even know Black Mask was part of Arkham City.
Yeah, so. I mean, you saw him at the beginning, actually, when you're in the prison and you're breaking out as Bruce.
Right.
You actually see Black Mask getting beat up or something at the beginning, but there's very little of him in the game other than that Robin DLC. And so I'm interested in that because, you know, Arkham City was great because it brought Hugo Strange to a bit more prominence. So this could be cool as the game that brings Black Mask to more prominence. And I'm also interested to note if Kevin Conroy will come back or not.
I have a feeling he will. But I would also like to. I would be interested in seeing someone else do it.
Well, it depends on how young Batman is. I mean, if it's middle career Batman, you know, Kevin Conroy works. But Kevin Conroy sounds like 35 to 40 year old Batman, mm-hmm. not really 22, 23 year old Batman. And I mean, your voice changes; it gets deeper as you get older. So it would feel a little silly to have a younger Batman voiced by Kevin Conroy. I would throw out, if I could throw out an off-the-wall suggestion, considering I've been playing Bioshock for the past, like, 2 weeks, or week and a half, however long it's been. Troy Baker, who played Two-Face in Arkham City, that guy would make the perfect young Batman. I mean, his voice is just this perfect young timbre. He's an incredible actor. I would absolutely be elated if somebody said, oh, that guy's going to be Batman. He was also the guy that played Robin in the Robin DLC. So,
okay. I wouldn't be surprised if, maybe not Two-Face, but I wouldn't be surprised if Harvey Dent makes an appearance in that game either.
Yeah, like, believe me, more Troy Baker is better for me. He's like one of my favorite voice actors ever right now. So, yeah. So, but side note, folks, if you haven't played Bioshock yet, fun game, pick it up. It's as long as you like first-person shooters, which I'm not that crazy about, but I digress. Good acting, really, really ambitious storytelling. So now, since we're talking about some of these video games and we're talking a little bit about superheroes, maybe we should transition just a little bit over into film. Mm-hmm. And recently, a couple of days ago even, the president of Warner Brothers did an interview with Entertainment Weekly, I think it was, about the upcoming Man of Steel film and how it could possibly kick off a DC cinematic universe. So I'm just curious, Shane, I don't know if you were a fan of the Marvel movies or not. Were you?
Oh, God, yes. I love them. I think some people would probably call me a bit too much of an optimist, but I'm one of the few people that actually loves Iron Man 2. I think each time I see it, it's on FX now, and they show it all the time, so I almost stop every single time it's on to watch it, and Iron Man 2 kind of gets better, and I even loved Thor, which, even though it's not the best of all the Marvel movies, I thought it was just great, and I don't see how anyone could argue that Marvel did not perfectly build their universe in these movies.
Sure. I perfectly respect your opinion there. I will say, and I say this as a little bit of a film snob, probably. Hopefully not too pretentiously, though. I am not the biggest fan of most of those Marvel films, and not because I don't like Marvel characters. I obviously do like Marvel characters. Right. I'm getting to know them better. But from a filmmaking standpoint, I have some problems with a few of those films. Iron Man I thought was terrific.
Right.
Iron Man 2 I did not like.
Okay.
I did not like The Incredible Hulk. And
I enjoy it. It's better than the Ang Lee Hulk, but I know some film snobs actually enjoy the Ang Lee Hulk, so
I'm one of them. I am. I have to be honest with you. The Ang Lee Hulk is a movie that is aging a lot better for me than The Incredible Hulk is, even.
I haven't watched it since theaters, so I can't really be a fair judge of The Ang Lee Hulk.
Yeah, it is slow. It's an artier take on the character than audiences were probably ready for. But I am always fascinated by this idea of trying to, you know, put in weightier themes in these types mm-hmm. of characters. I mean, you know, they always say superheroes are like our new American mythology, mm-hmm. whatever. You know, that might be a bit of an overstatement, but
I don't think so.
I mean, it's certainly culturally, you know, important. Yep. So when you put together a film like, I don't know, let's do a comparison. You have the first Spider-Man, okay. And then you have the Hulk, the Ang Lee Hulk. The first Spider-Man is a fine film. It's a bit popcorny. It has some nice Sam Raimi touches. There is at least some artistic sensibility there. And then you see the Hulk film, which is this wonderfully, you know, tragic tale of a man who, you know, comes from an abusive family, and mm-hmm. You know, he has this building rage inside of him. It's almost Greek in a way. I appreciate the Hulk for what it is because I think it laid the groundwork for greater artistic achievements later. Because of the Hulk, even though it bombed, I feel like it almost opened up Bryan Singer to create this incredible coming out parable in X2 that a lot of people, you know, I mean, I think most people probably caught on to, but maybe didn't appreciate as much as they should have.
Right.
X2 was this incredible achievement for superhero films. And then you follow up X2 with, you know, a movie like The Dark Knight.
Yes.
Which, I mean, oh, holy cow. I mean, talk about the godfather of the genre. So.
And then you have, even though it debatable on quality, I mean, you still have Watchmen in that same vein.
Yeah.
Getting adapted.
Well, sure. I mean, it's you know, Watchmen is a whole other conversation we can have once when before Watchmen ends. But that's a movie that I enjoyed probably more than I should have. But I'll say this: Hannah saw it with me in the theater. She didn't know anything about Watchmen. She never read the material, and she loved the movie. So,
hey, if you can make Watchmen comprehensible without making it a kindergarten version of Watchmen, I think you've succeeded on some level.
Yeah, I mean, I think unfortunately, there's a level of love for that material that some people they grasp onto. I mean, we're obviously digressing here, but people have grasped onto the Bible that is Watchmen.
Right.
And anything that strays from what their dream version of Watchmen is, which is exactly what's on the page, is something that they can't necessarily accept. So
right.
That's always a problem we run into with Watchmen. So anyway, the Marvel movies,
they don't really take that serious tone, but it's fine because not all comics take that serious tone.
That's true. I mean, the argument has been made before that they are successful in what they aim at, which is popcorn fare. And I can accept that. It doesn't necessarily make them satisfying movie-going experiences for me, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they fail as films.
Really?
They
you didn't find Captain America a satisfying movie-going experience?
You did not?
Well, I'm saying you didn't.
Oh, no, I did.
Okay.
Oh, no, Captain America is one of the ones I like the best.
Yeah.
I
hate that we can't stay in that period, because I think that it being a period piece is what made it so good.
Yeah, it felt a lot like you were watching Joe Johnston's The Rocketeer a little bit, and it felt a little bit like, I don't know. It reminded me a little bit of Indiana Jones in a way. I mean, that not necessarily as good, but it had similar beats to it. Far better than the actual Indiana Jones sequel we got a couple years earlier.
I think Cap and Iron Man are the standouts from the ones that lead into Avengers. I would say, and I know many would debate me on it, just because so many people love to debate Avengers versus Dark Knight Rises or versus any other comic book movie, but I think Avengers is the pinnacle of what Marvel was building to. I think it's the best they've accomplished so far, and I am firm in my belief that it is the most comic book-like movie we have gotten so far.
Sure.
We have a lot that try to take the imagery of comic books and turn it into film, but this one just, every single frame of that movie feels like a panel in a comic book, but it's not ever cartoonish, or at least as realistic as a movie with a giant green monster can be.
Right. With the Avengers, one of the issues I ran into is that as we got to like the third act of the Avengers, I started to get a little bored.
I can see that.
There was a lot of just Avengers fighting faceless aliens and a lot of posing and a lot of like macho cheeseball music and pan around the entire team. And it just felt like, oh, I forgot, we're watching product. You know, whereas the first act, all the meeting stuff, that's when I got really excited. That's like when the inner fanboy in me that got excited.
The first 20-30 minutes of that movie is great.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like where Cap first meets Iron Man and Iron Man and then fight Thor. And
I think I fanboyed during that scene in Germany with Loki and Cap and Iron Man more than I did for anything else in the rest of that movie.
Yeah, I know. It was really, really great. And what surprises me is there are people that say that's actually the slowest part of the movie for them.
Oh, whatever.
I know. that's when I was excited. I guess it's one of these things where the excitement starts to dull, and I felt like the S.H.I.E.L.D. the helicarrier sequence just went on forever.
It does. It does kind of drag.
I mean, Avengers is a movie that's made up of about four big set pieces, more or less.
It is.
But that doesn't make it bad. The writing is still sharp. It's just, you know, I unfortunately cannot live on action beats alone. And
that's true.
I hope whatever they do next, I think that the next film will be better in the Avengers sequel or whatever, because they won't have to worry about this team building thing and getting, you know, the band together and are they going to get along? You know,
I would not be shocked at all if we go into Avengers 2 and except for having to set up why the Avengers are joining back together, we just establish, oh, well, maybe we're adding two or three new members without them getting their own movie or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised at all if Ant-Man, Wasp, and there's a rumor going around that Black Panther might be showing up in Avengers 2. I wouldn't be surprised if they just pop up. We don't get any explanation about them in their own movie, although Ant-Man is obviously getting his own. I would not be surprised at all just to see them show up.
I think Ant-Man comes after Avengers 2, though, right?
Right, it does.
Okay, so that's the one thing to keep in mind. You may not
whether or not that means it's part of Phase 3 or if it's still Phase 2, I don't know, but Ant-Man is not till after Avengers 2.
And not to get like too dug into this, that's actually the one I'm most excited for, if I'm being honest with you, because I love everything Edgar Wright does. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about Ant-Man, because I think stylistically, he's the most interesting director they've ever hired.
If we're still doing this podcast a year from now, it'll be interesting to see our discussions on Guardians of the Galaxy, because that is my most movie I'm most excited for Phase 2. And I think that is possibly your least excited for movie.
Correct. Probably,
of the next 3 years.
Correct. No, I am not looking forward to the talking raccoon. But the, you know, I will give anything a chance. Believe me, I will not, despite my protestations, I will be there to see it in the theater, and I hope it does well. I do not want a comic book movie to fail, so because you know one failure could be the death of an entire line, you know, with these movie studios. So I'd prefer
transitioning from what Marvel wants to do. I assume we're wanting to talk about whether DC will mimic it.
Yeah, you know, is mimicking the way to go? You think?
It almost seems to be what people are going to expect. I think they still have leeway to do their own thing with it, but I think we're going to come away with a lot of parallels between the two, which is fine. It's not a huge deal. It's all superheroes, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sort of torn about the whole thing because I wouldn't mind seeing a Justice League movie. I love the Justice League. You know, I'm a DC guy at heart, but at some point, I mean, I don't want to see a cluttered, lame movie. If I didn't really like the Avengers that much, imagine the Justice League version of that. I mean, you're going to get when they didn't even have their own solo movies. And
More lazy approach to it.
Yeah, it just, you know, it starts to feel like a cash-in. I mean, all these movies are cash-ins. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But I think I would prefer either, and I've had discussions with people about this in the past, I would prefer a really solid Superman trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Akin to the Batman trilogy that I think is excellent. I would like to see a Superman version of that, and I'm willing to concede, just personally, the idea of having a World's Finest type team up film, because I think there's a lot of really good potential for just having a Batman Superman movie. They flirted with it for years and years and years. Wolfgang Peterson almost directed a Batman Superman movie before we got Batman Begins. So I feel like that's something that's got to be on WB's radar.
Probably.
And I think it honestly could bring in Avengers-style money. It's Batman and Superman.
Yeah, I think that one is probably their easiest money grab out of a solo Batman or a solo Superman film, especially more so than anything like The Flash or Wonder Woman or Aquaman. But I still kind of want to see Justice League. I want to see them all together, and I'd really like DC to take another crack at Green Lantern.
Sure. With Hal or with a different Green Lantern?
I'm fine with Hal, but I could completely understand if they want to go with a different one.
I mean, I think it's a good opportunity for them to have a little diversity. I mean, I'd like to see Jon Stewart. I mean, really, I'd like to see Kyle Rayner. Ha ha ha. But, you know, Jon Stewart is a character that's pretty well known. I mean, granted, we're almost, gosh, are we almost 10 years removed from the Justice League Unlimited cartoon? We're a long way away from it. Maybe it's like more like
there's a whole generation of kids who grew up watching that cartoon, and Jon Stewart is their Green Lantern.
Right, so. Right. I mean, it's like people were asking, why is Green Lantern white? You know, and I was like, I can understand why you'd ask that, but I think it would be a nice opportunity for them to shake up that team a little bit, because Avengers, you know, other than Samuel L. Jackson, is a pretty, you know, similar looking team, honestly. And it would be nice for Justice League to sort of set itself apart by having somebody like Jon Stewart on the team.
I think another good way they could do it, I know it'll never happen in a million years, but I would love for Justice League as a movie to be more like have you read the comic book Justice League New Frontier?
Yeah, sure.
the more Silver Age version of the Justice League's origin. Right. I think that would be fantastic to see as a live action movie,
like a 60s version of the Justice League, Mad Men style, I guess.
Yeah, I think that would be amazing. It'll never happen, but it would be amazing.
Well, sure. I feel like, unfortunately, Hollywood has seen that period pieces, other than Captain America, which was still a part of a greater universe,
right,
they don't do very well. Like Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow flopped, and I'm sure there's others that I just can't think of right now. But yeah, I'm sure they have that fear in the back of their heads, like if it's not in modern day, people aren't going to want to go see it. Or unless it's involving World War II, then people will go see that. Though, I don't know. Maybe with X-Men First Class, that fear is abated a little bit. Well, I guess
they need to make two or three more movies for studios to be a bit more comfortable with it.
Correct. And a Justice League may be too big of a gamble. I mean, X-Men's thing. Justice League is like this is WB's moneymaker. They have no franchises other than Superman at this point, so they really want to milk this DC Entertainment thing for all it's worth. I don't know. I mean, would you want to see him go straight to a Justice League movie, or did you want to see him make a bunch of solo movies? What would be ideal for you?
It's been an interesting debate to see this unfold, because a lot of people don't want them to do the solo movies first, just because that's so much out of Marvel's playbook. But I really think you don't have to do a solo. You don't have to do like Marvel, where you have a solo movie that introduces every single main character. You don't have to have a Flash movie, a Wonder Woman movie, a Green Lantern movie, if heaven forbid, if they go with the New 52 and they do Cyborg on the team too, you definitely don't need a Cyborg movie, but
no.
I think Wonder Woman, you definitely have to have. You have to make a Wonder Woman movie.
Right.
I think Wonder Woman is, if you're going to do build up, which I would prefer to have, I feel like that's a better way to build up. Presumably Darkseid would be the villain, just because I think they're going to take a New 52 approach to it and have Darkseid be what unites them. So I think Darkseid is going to be the villain, so you can build him up, which would be interesting to see. And I think Wonder Woman is one that they would almost have to do. I could see them doing Flash as well. But other than that, I really think you could get away with introducing Aquaman, Green Lantern, and then possibly Cyborg or Martian Manhunter in the movie, Justice League movie itself.
Yeah, I mean, technically speaking, you already have a Green Lantern film. You mean it wasn't a successful one critically or commercially, but you have a film.
And I would be okay with them acknowledging the continuity of that movie as long as we never make a movie like that one ever again.
Correct. It was painful, but so Green Lantern is sort of known in the public consciousness right now.
Yeah.
Batman and Superman speak for themselves.
You don't even have to make another Batman movie. Batman could just show up in Justice League. Everybody knows Batman.
Well, that's my feeling, too. I mean, I can't stand the idea that people want to see a Batman reboot.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't have to connect to the Nolan trilogy. It could just be another Batman. People get it. It's Batman.
Now, I could see the worry that if you don't make a solo Batman film, Batman is going to seem like more archetype, stereotype type of character in Justice League. He's just going to be the dark, brooding guy, and there's going to be nothing interesting about him if he doesn't have a story on his own first. But I think that's going to depend on more the kind of story they tell with Justice League.
Yeah, I mean, there's there's a lot of questions around it, and obviously this Batman thing has been sort of what's centered around most people's rumors and wonderings, because, you know, I guess now it's official that Christopher Nolan and Christian Bale are not going to be involved.
Which is good.
I mean, that's fine. I would prefer Christopher Nolan go do something else. He's a filmmaker I really love, and I would not...
It's not believable. Watching those three Batman movies, as comic booky as Dark Knight Rises gets, it's still not believable that Superman exists in that universe. Because Superman would help out when Gotham is cut off like it was in Dark Knight Rises.
Well, I guess if you went in the assumption that Superman doesn't arrive until after the Dark Knight Rises.
I suppose, but
I guess that doesn't really work either. I mean, Superman is like, as a superhero, I mean, because I don't know what this Man of Steel movie is going to be like, but
yeah.
I mean, if you go with the idea that Superman has not debuted yet and he's not quite at the point where he's a hero, maybe it could work, but there's still a lot of like, this John Blake thing and, like, you know, all this back-breaking stuff you've got to try and do, no pun intended, try and fit the Nolan trilogy into something else. I'm okay with it happening if they really want to go there, but I am I certainly don't want to see too much compromised storytelling to make it work. I don't know. The Nolan trilogy is terrific, and my DVDs wouldn't blow up if there was something that changed the ending of The Dark Knight Rises.
I will still be buying the rumored ultimate version of that trilogy. I have not bought the trilogy box set because I'm holding out for the rumored ultimate edition, so it would not ruin my buying that if we kept that continuity.
Oh, I couldn't wait. I couldn't wait at all, man. I was buying that stuff almost a couple days before it even came out, so I had to hook up on that. But anyway,
so we got the announcement with Man of Steel, though, that it's going to have references, or at least they said, maybe not references, they said it will open it up to a wider world. What do you think that is going to entail? Like, are we even going to get a reference to something, or is it just going to be that, well, it's Superman, so naturally everything else can exist too?
Well, everything's been so secretive. I mean, mm-hmm. Zack Snyder has been so dodgy about, what this could lead to if it leads to anything other than a Superman sequel. Right. So I don't know. And it feels like his answers keep changing. And that could have a little bit to do with the fact that DC's mind keeps changing.
Right.
Though maybe they're punking us all, man, and playing it very close to the vest. And they just really want people to show up for Man of Steel to see what
they're
going to
get
to show up. What's that?
They've already got butts in the seat for Man of Steel. I don't think they're... I think that's just a big marketing ploy, them saying, oh, we're going to wait and see how Man of Steel does. It's like, no, you're going to market the hell out of the fact that Christopher Nolan is attached to that movie. You are going to market that it is a Superman movie that is different, and it's more in the vein of those Christopher Nolan Batman movies, and it's going to get butts in seats. I think if tickets were already on sale, there would already be showings that were sold out of it.
I hope so. You know, there's been some concern because they haven't really marketed it very well.
We still got a few months.
Yeah, I know. So. It's a little early, but I guess...
I'm starting to see Iron Man 3 stuff just now show up in stores.
Yeah.
So I would expect Man of Steel stuff to begin to show up within the next month and a half.
Here's hoping. I'm very excited about it. I will say, even from, like, a more snobby film perspective, one of the things I'm most excited about is Michael Shannon as Zod.
Oh God, yes. That was probably the most perfect casting they made for that entire movie.
I mean, what an intense, phenomenal actor. I mean, that movie could be terrible, and having Michael Shannon and Amy Adams in that movie is mm-hmm. enough to make me think, wow, they're swinging for the fences in terms of performances, which is funny because Zack Snyder's greatest weakness is directing actors. So I'm hoping the great acting jujus will turn around and counteract any of Zack Snyder's deficiencies in that area.
I tell you, Snyder is not even a worry for me with Man of Steel. It's Goyer I'm worried about, because when Goyer is paired with a Nolan brother, he is a fine writer. But when he is on his own, he has a tendency to produce crap.
Yeah, well, that script for Batman Begins, boy, it fell apart in the third act.
A little bit.
And people argue that with me all the time. But, I mean, David Goyer is not a bad writer. He's just not necessarily an ideal one.
He needs someone working with him.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't David Goyer that made The Dark Knight great. It was Jonathan Nolan and Christopher Nolan. So,
exactly.
Along with, some great performances. But one in particular.
For the rest of his career, David Goyer will always be able to slap on a trailer from the writer of The Dark Knight. But... it's still, those who know more about the producing of that movie know that he's not the only reason it was good.
Well, he only wrote the story of The Dark Knight.
Exactly.
I mean, and it was a very embryonic version of the story. Granted, I think...
not that hard to weave together Long Halloween with a Joker story, so...
Right. I've had some people that have debated that point with me, and I'm not sure. I mean, some people that apparently are more in the know than I am, that his involvement is more than that, but I don't really know, so I can't really speak much to it. But, yeah, Goyer was the thing I was most worried about, but my hope is that Syncope, which is Christopher Nolan and his mm-hmm. wife's production company, I'm hoping that somebody from Syncope, be it, I think it's Jonah Goldberg or whatever that guy's name is, that's Christopher Nolan's assistant producer, they were like standing over Zack Snyder's shoulder the entire time that movie was being made.
I'm sure there was a lot of pressure after Superman Returns was such a flop, I'm sure there's a lot of pressure on Zack Snyder to make this a good Superman movie.
Yeah, well, we sure hope so. I mean, there's certainly a lot riding on it for WB, and Zack Snyder was not their initial choice, I understand. I mean, they were interviewing guys like Darren Aronofsky, and they were reaching out to even Robert Zemeckis, I read one time. But
well, they want Superman to be performance capture then.
Right. The uncanny valley with the dead eyes and everything. No, but I am going to be interested because Zack Snyder was such an odd choice for Christopher Nolan when that was announced. Because I was one of the guys that was rooting for Duncan Jones to take over the role, but that didn't end up happening. So a weird choice, but he's used to doing comic book adaptations, and he's certainly very faithful to source material. So
yeah. I don't think we have any worry about it being faithful to source material. So I guess our more concern right now is how does this, it's going to bring something in from the DCU. What is it going to do? Is it going to be in the form of an after credits scene, which I think is the most likely, or is it going to be just a reference that, oh, Central City or something like that gets a name drop?
Yeah. 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 So if it's an after credits scene, what do you think it's going to be? You think it's going to be a Batman thing?
I would be shocked if it was Batman. I think Batman is probably the least likely thing.
All right. Would it be Wonder Woman or something?
I honestly just don't know because they're so secretive. And so it's not like with Iron Man 3 where, okay, they've cast Chris Pratt as Star-Lord, so that leaves it open for them to shoot a quick Star-Lord scene for after Iron Man 3's credits or something like that. With Man of Steel, they've been so secretive, I have no idea. Like, I think Batman would be the most shocking for me for Batman to show up. But I'm kind of open for anything to happen.
Keep in mind, we didn't know Samuel L. Jackson was Nick Fury either in Iron
That's
Man.
That's true, too.
So there is a possibility there's like a
Which
surprise.
Which I think makes it so much more exciting. It's become such a thing now. It's become a part of whenever a new Marvel Studios movie comes out. It's like, oh, well, the first thing we need to guess is not even the plot of the movie itself, but what's the after credits scene going to be?
Right. I'm actually getting burned out on those things. I completely skipped out on the Evil Dead one completely. I'm tired of stingers, man. I mean, if they're interesting, fine. But, like, for example, that Evil Dead stinger was just a... You know, it's so lame. I didn't even care. And I love Bruce Campbell. But
So do you have any thoughts on what Man of Steel's could be or if there'll even be one or
I don't believe there's going to be one.
I wouldn't be surprised with that either.
Yeah, I don't think there will be. And I think there's going to be a lot of disappointment in Fanboy Nation on it. But personally, yep. I'll be more excited because they're not worried about it. They're just worried about making a good movie. And to me, that's all the more important. If the Superman film itself is very good and they maybe put a hint towards like Lex Luthor or something, that would be
It's
going to
happen. Lex Luthor's going to happen eventually. You don't do Superman without Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And I mean, if there's like hints of a greater Superman universe, kind of like how they did with Batman Begins and there was hints of the Joker, you know?
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
That works for me. You know?
Oh, I won't be shocked at all if Lex Corp or something like that gets a name drop.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean that's fine. I mean, as long as the film itself is good, I don't really care. If they put in some sort of little visit from, you know, Alfred or something.
So. I tell you what, I'd love to see. This might be a bit too similar to Smallville, but I would love if Martian Manhunter made some kind of cameo.
Sure. It's a great character. It would certainly be appropriate, especially given the new 52 take. And that's the one thing that I think needs to be thought of, too, is that I am certain that DC Entertainment wants to line up any Justice League movie to the new 52 Justice League.
I think whenever Justice League happens, and I think it will happen eventually, it's going to be that new 52 story. It's going to be Darkseid.
Yeah. I think that's almost a certainty. They're just going to go right for the throat and not play around. But
they're going to do that. They're going to re-release all the trades of it, give them new covers and all that. So
right with like a movie poster and stuff. Yeah. Well, don't forget we're also possibly getting Justice League Dark. So
yeah, I'll believe that when Haunted Mansion goes into production too. So
right. Along with what was it, Crimson? I can't even remember the name.
I'm still waiting on Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein movie. So
oh, that's not even gonna happen anymore. He's got this this movie with Benedict Cumberbatch. He's doing.
He's got that. He's supposedly doing something with maybe just producing, but he's doing something with 10/10, and then I don't know. I think with Guillermo del Toro, he seems to like to build a lot of hype and then only go through with about a 10% of what he hypes.
Yeah, I absolutely. It's
I'm excited for Pacific Rim. I'm pumped for it.
Sure, sure. I am too. I mean, I like giant robots and giant monsters as much as anybody, but you know, I'm not a huge Guillermo del Toro fan. I love Pan's Labyrinth, and
you didn't enjoy the first Hellboy?
I liked Hellboy fine. It was a good film. But his other movies that are outside of that, like I don't know if you ever saw The Devil's Backbone or Kronos. Neither of those films are particularly strong, in my opinion. And I think he's growing as a filmmaker. I think he's getting more interesting beyond that. But it's still not quite catching me. Like, the Hellboy movies still weren't quite my bag. But I'm hoping Pacific Rim is great. It's good that he's finally got a dang movie coming out, period.
Good God, yes. I was so excited for Haunted Mansion, and I would like to see that come to fruition, but I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see
Justice
what happens.
Justice League Dark is a thing where it's just like, oh, I heard that was discussed, but I'm not taking any stock in that happening.
No, it was almost like it was a rumor that got started, and then people were like, oh, people are excited about this. Let's do a Swamp Thing Constantine Phantom Stranger movie.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
It's a little bit of hard pill to swallow if they can't even get Wonder Woman off the ground. But yeah, we'll see.
I think that's the main point to make about most of DC stuff. It's like you can't even get Wonder Woman made. So
right. Well, hey, we're pressing on past the hour here, Shane. So quick question for you: what are you looking forward to next week? Anything you're gonna go see in the theater, or looking forward to on TV, or looking forward to reading?
Think about it. Let's see what's coming out next week in theaters. This week I got nothing coming out. My theater, local movie theater, does a good job getting some stuff, but we're still waiting on Place Beyond the Pines to show up, so I'd like to see that eventually come near me.
Sure.
So I can go see it. There's not really the next thing I'm waiting for is Iron Man. I'm kind of just sitting around waiting for Iron Man to come out, so it's more TV for me right now. So The Following's got 3 more episodes left, which will be good. Bates Motel's still going on. So
cool. Yeah, I'm you know, as far as going to the movies, I'm hoping that I'll be able to watch To the Wonder, which is Terrence Malick's new film. That's okay. Apparently on.
I was not a well, now I completely forgot the name of it.
Tree of Life?
Yeah, Tree of Life. I don't know why that went out of my head, but anyway, I was not a Tree of Life fan at all.
You know, it was a movie that grew on me after a while, but it was one of these things.
I couldn't even give it a second watch. I don't think I could allow it to grow on me. I don't think I could watch that movie again.
Hannah's right there with you. I mean, the Brad Pitt part's the only thing she enjoyed, but the dinosaurs.
And, well, even then, it's like, I like to like Brad Pitt in movies. I don't like to hate Brad Pitt, so.
Yeah, that's one of the finest Brad Pitt performances I've ever seen. So I enjoy it on those grounds particularly.
My problem with Tree of Life is I got my minor in creative writing, and there was always that one kid in creative writing class that felt like he had to be artistic just for the point of being artistic, not really actually doing anything with the story. And I felt like that's what Tree of Life was. It was just being artsy for the point of being artsy.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. There is a lot of pretension in all of Malick's films that make it very challenging. We tried to watch Badlands at my friend's house, and it was a group of people that generally they really, really like indie films. And we watched The Master there, and they all loved it. Okay, so the next week or 2 weeks later, we decided to watch Badlands, which is Terrence Malick's very first film that just came out on Criterion. And let me just tell you, they hated it. And I liked it okay. It was sort of, you know, it was something that I had to, like, find things to appreciate about it to try and enjoy it. It went from a place of defense. But still, it wasn't, like, a thing I loved. But it was, like, just vicious hate for this movie, my friends. And I thought, gosh, what a divisive filmmaker that guy is. But, you know, guys like David Fincher and Christopher Nolan, he's like their biggest hero, their biggest inspiration outside of like Stanley Kubrick. So,
I mean, I'll give him that. I mean, the guy doesn't take the fact that people are just so he doesn't lower his standards. I'll give him that. So at least he's out there producing his own stories. He's not doing what a lot of falling into a lot of the traps to more suit more audiences. He's doing what he wants to do. I'll give him credit with that, but it's not working with me so far.
Well,
so.
And apparently To the Wonder is his worst received film yet, so
oh boy. So yeah. You're in for a thrill.
40-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes, baby.
Place Beyond the Pines, I'm excited for. I think that should be decent. Once I finally get the chance to see it, once it finally gets a wider release, I've heard good things. I know you've heard bad things, so that one will be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's a little divisive amongst people I know too. I enjoyed Blue Valentine, which is that director's previous
mm-hmm.
film,
mm-hmm.
and Ryan Gosling doesn't really, other than maybe Gangster Squad, which I didn't bother to see,
right.
He doesn't really pick bad projects lately.
No.
So I'm hoping to go see that on Sunday, if not tomorrow, because it is here, luckily. But there's really nothing coming out next week, because I'm going to skip Oblivion, honestly.
I am too. It looks awful.
You know, the reviews haven't started out bad, but, you know, still, it's Tom Cruise in sci-fi.
If I'm going to watch a dystopian sci-fi movie, I'll just wait for Elysium. So.
Exactly. Well, I can't wait to talk about that. But otherwise, you know, it's going to be a typical week, and I'm looking forward to some more good comics and some more good TV, man. I got Game of Thrones on Sunday, so it's all good. Anyhow, we're going to wrap this one up. But anyway, Shane, man, you have a good weekend. And
all right, you too.
Guys, hope you enjoyed. We'll catch you next week.
Played a previous role. We've turned the corner and it